I'm Elena Landsberg-Lewis, your host of Grandmothers on the Move, the podcast that kicks old stereotypes to the curb. Come meet these creative, outrageous, authentic, adventurous, irreverent, and powerful disruptors and influencers. Grandmothers, from the living room to the courtroom, making powerful contributions in every walk of life. We know them most intimately as loving caregivers, the older women in our lives with a thousand stories about their grandchildren and pictures in their purses. In this podcast, you'll come to know even more about our grandmothers. They are galvanized, determined, and are guaranteed to get you thinking. What drives them? What are they up to? What is the potential of grandmother power, and how is it changing the world? Grandmothers are on the move. You don't want to be left behind. Hi, it's Elena. Welcome back to Grandmothers on the Move. For those of you who are longtime listeners, thank you for your support, and I'm sure you'll join me in being delighted. The Grandmothers on the Move podcast has a sponsor for the first time, SheChanged News, and you can find it at SheChangedNews.com. It's a newsletter for powerful women and positive aging. Lots of terrific information about older women activists and grandmother activists. Grandmothers for Refugees in Australia advocates for compassionate welcome and safe settlement of all people seeking asylum. Their primary focus is children, and they also advocate for those subjected to the physical and psychological damage inflicted by Australia's offshore and onshore processing regime. Today I have the great pleasure of speaking with three members of Grandmothers for Refugees, Elizabeth Cox, also known as Sabet. Sabet was born in Australia, has spent the last 5 decades of her working life in Papua New Guinea and other Pacific Island countries. She's a grandmother to 15 children in Papua New Guinea and Fiji, and is now a proxy mother to a dozen refugees and asylum seekers who have languished in offshore detention in Papua New Guinea for 6 years, now in limbo, and I'm sure we'll talk about this much more in a moment, in Australia for the past 2 years. She trained as a psychologist and social worker, but spent her working life in rural development and women's rights, working with everyone from local civil society to government to international NGOs, and as regional director for the Pacific for UN Women. She has devoted her life to women's rights, movements, networks, and human rights defenders. Janine Lawrence. Janine's working background is in education. For 30 years, she worked as a teacher in secondary schools in Melbourne. Semi-retired, she works part-time for the University of Melbourne as a clinical teaching specialist. She volunteers in a program supporting the rights of young people in custody while being interviewed by police. She's deeply committed to improving the situation for refugees and those seeking asylum in Australia. And she's been a member of Grandmothers for Refugees since its inception in 2014 and currently leads the group in Jaga Jaga. Jane Tuzo. Jane has traveled extensively from Indonesia to Burma, India, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Iran, Lebanon, to Syria and beyond, and she's derived insight into some of the elements of the refugee experience as a result. She got involved in community issues when she became a mother, particularly preschool community music, and as a result, she studied and became engaged with community and development and has integrated her experience and passion through involvement with many groups around music, the environment, education, democracy, and social justice. And Jane served for 8 years as an elected local government councillor, which provided valuable insight into governance issues and practice. And she brings all of this experience to continue the work for human rights through Grandmothers for Refugees. Many, many years of contribution to improving the human condition. Welcome, Jane, Janine, Sabet, to this conversation with Grandmothers on the Move.
Thank you, Ilana. This is Jane here. I think it's really important for people to understand a little bit about the very, very weird history of Australia, because what we're doing to refugees now simply doesn't make sense. And people get very confused trying to work out what the problem is. But it's a politically created problem that partly comes from our British colonial setup. But we were set up as a penal colony by Britain to get rid of its own poor people that it just threw into jail. And necessarily involved in that was dispossessing the Indigenous people. And we've had conservative governments most of Australian history, you know, white Australian history, when you kind of think about it in an amusing way, their main program is to keep money flowing into the people who like to have most of the money, you know, like the Republicans, and that most Australians are very content now having a comfortable life but have got no idea how that comfort is being paid for. They just think they deserve it. after the Second World War, Australia had developed a good immigration and refugee receiving program. And I think because people here take so little interest in what's going on in the country politically, that when mandatory detention of refugees who'd arrived by boat, which people do arrive here by boat because it's an island continent, and if you can't get here because you've had to run away, you're going to end up coming here by boat. So those people became subject to mandatory detention, and that was all in 1992, so around the time of the Iraq War and all of that. And detention centres were built in the desert and nobody knew much about it, and everyone was very confused and thought those people must have done something wrong. So 20 years in, which is when we started at that time, Grandmothers Against Detention of Refugee Children, was because a new Conservative government had decided they would just stick people on islands in the Pacific instead of in the desert, and that included families. And on an island called Nauru, which Australia had already totally exploited for its phosphate reserves, people who arrived in boats were intercepted and put there or taken there from having managed to arrive in Australia, then taken back out again. But a big part of it was secrecy. So then it was very hard for people to find out about it. Anyway, a group of grandmothers, none of the three of us, but another group of friends who were early childhood educators, had got together and thought, gee, maybe grandmothers can do something about this. We're all grandmothers and we've been activists for years, and let's call a meeting and maybe 20 people will come. Anyway, about 70 people came and everyone was very willing to get to work on the matter. And that was how we started as Grandmothers Against Detention of Refugee Children. We decided to wear purple so people could easily see us and it would be easy enough to go to the op shop and get something purple to wear. So we started and made a few events and people noticed us and people joined, and it's gone on from there. So we got organised as a community organisation. Grandmothers landed on the stage and people bonded and never looked back, really. And things just keep getting worse politically. So there's now this massive detention industry set up. Billions of public dollars are being spent to keep this detention industry going now for people who, if they'd arrived 20 years ago, would have been part of the community pretty much on arrival. So that's a little bit of background.
That's incredibly helpful, Jean. Thank you so much.
I imagine that while the group and the website is terrific, it gives you lots of information about the kind of advocacy, the kind of support that you want to give to refugees who have been detained, but that also it sounds like there's an enormous amount of awareness raising to be done.
It's Janine here, and I'm happy to talk about that. I think the problem has been with our government's response is that they believe that the inhumane policies that they're initiating and implementing are popular, and in the past they certainly have been. I think they appeal to, I have to say, the racist, prejudiced part of our population, and past governments have really worked on developing fear and raising concerns about the refugees who are applying to come to Australia. And so when I talk to people who don't know much about the issue, they do assume that these people have an illegal background. The government has painted some of them as rapists and criminals, and people do tend to accept that. And so it comes as a shock for even my friends to discover that they are so unaware of the plight of these people, where they've come from, what they've experienced, and also the amount of money, billions of dollars are being wasted on this industry to keep people who are innocent and need our help locked up. So when you ask us if there's a degree of education involved, yes, there is. And that's a large part of what we do. I'm co-convener of the local branch that I belong to. The organisation is divided up into federal electorates because we're a grassroots organisation and we feel that that's the most effective way we can work. So our particular group represents Jaga Jaga, which is a federal electorate. We've got about 23 members. The sort of things we do is go out on the streets in our purple. We have flyers to hand out which raise consciousness about the issues. We used to regularly go to train stations and meet the people as they were going to work in the mornings. COVID's put a stop to a lot of that. We stand on street corners with banners and try to get support for our ideas. People toot, which is encouraging when they go past. We lobby members of parliament. We lobby our own local member, senators, the local council. In Australia, we've got three levels of government. the federal, state, and then local government. So we try and influence all of those areas. Yeah, so there is a lot of education involved.
Thank you, Janine. And Sabet, I saw something that you sent out just recently today, Sabet, with the statistics on offshore detention as of December 20th, which are really horrifying and shocking. And I'd love to talk about that and how you're engaging now that you're back home and thinking about all of this in the context of human rights defenders and human rights generally.
Thanks, Ilona. I finished with the UN in 2013 after 6 years. I went to the UN Pacific Regional Office in Fiji and was responsible for 15 Pacific Island countries, including Papua New Guinea, where I'd lived most of my adult life. But that was back in 2013. There had been, with prior Australian governments, a policy to send some people offshore to Manus Island. It's a remote island north of mainland Papua New Guinea, going into the Pacific Ocean, and then further north is Micronesia and Japan, etc. So it's remote, and it's always been a particularly remote part of Papua New Guinea, Manus Island, and Nauru, which is basically a banana republic that had gone bankrupt after all of its phosphate reserves and funds were depleted. And so that's been a country in a state of bankruptcy up until that time. So what was most annoying to me is that the Australian government, in its continuing colonialism in the Pacific, had made deals that had both political and economic benefits for the country of Papua New Guinea. Even though it's resource rich, it's struggling with corruption and high levels of poverty and underservicing of the population and the bankrupt Nauru. So my particular concern was what Australia was doing to these two countries, and particularly Papua New Guinea, Manus Island, where they sent about 2,000 of the men who were intercepted by boat, taken to an island off Australia, told that they would never be allowed to set foot in Australia. And this was all for political gain for a government that wanted to be re-elected. Both major parties of Australia are culpable for the kind of policies that we've got, because both have used this lever to try to win votes. So an offshore detention system that had gone into decline, was being closed down, was suddenly reopened. Manus Island in Papua New Guinea is regarded in Papua New Guinea as a paradise, but Australia has managed to turn it into what they called a hellhole. And that hellhole was supposed to be the message, the deterrent to anybody else who wants to come by boat. You will not be allowed to set foot in Australia. You will be sent to Manus Island. And men who were sent to Manus Island under strict guard were told that the people of Papua New Guinea, and in Manus Island, they're among the most highly educated group in Papua New Guinea. They were told that these people are cannibals. And the people of Manus Island were told that the men who are arriving and will be put behind these high wire fences are terrorists. So what they did is fed into an antagonism between the local population that were hired as guards and the men who were detained. And there were a number of riots and incidents, violent incidents, where Papua New Guineans were violently attacking and sometimes killing the men who were in detention. So this I found very distressing and very upsetting, and that's what angered me most. I had just retired from the UN and I resumed work in Papua New Guinea, but I was travelling more frequently backwards and forwards, thinking about whether I would retire into Melbourne, where I was born, but I had left in 1970. And I had heard about the Grandmothers for Refugees, and I was very grateful for the work that they were doing. I was very inspired by their activism, women of my own age, and I had become a member, but I was not an active member because I was always travelling and not able to attend vigils or meetings, and I was mostly in Papua New Guinea. I was called upon to intervene in a number of situations because I have a lot of contacts in Papua New Guinea. In some cases, it was just to help desperate men who were artists and writers and musicians who needed the equipment to cope with the trauma of detention. So I was trying to get a music recording equipment to some people. I was visiting some men who were imprisoned when they protested, were so badly beaten, left on the floor of a dreadful police lockup, and then finally put into prison without any charges, left with broken ribs without even a Panadol for 10 weeks. A terrible, terrible cases. And other cases where people were being moved backwards and forwards, supposedly for medical treatment in the capital. Some were then told that there was an option set up for them as they decreased the kind of prison-like features. There was a court case in Papua New Guinea led by a Papua New Guinean lawyer that challenged the detention and it was unconstitutional. So the men were supposedly liberated, but they were forcefully relocated to another part of the island and not able to go anywhere. And they were occasionally brought down to the capital for medical treatment, which in most cases was not given. They were languishing. So I also met quite a few men who were languishing there, were bored, didn't know what their options were. Eventually, some of them were offered an option, a political arrangement that was made between a former prime minister and President Obama for 1,200 men to be resettled in the US. And then that was challenged by Donald Trump. But finally, it started to happen, but it happened in the middle of COVID. So as I started to settle more permanently in Melbourne, I engaged more seriously with the grandmothers. And that was just at the time where I had befriended a number of men that were going to be resettled in the US. So we followed their journey. Their journey was full of optimism and enthusiasm that they might build a new life in the US, but they went right into the middle of COVID in May 2020. So when I first started attending the grandmothers' meetings, I was able to tell them about the experience of these men and some of the experiences and some of the interventions I'd made in Papua New Guinea and the terrible kind of situations that people could get caught up in. So Jane, who was leading that branch of the grandmothers I joined, said, why don't we adopt them? So I'm very grateful to the grandmothers and McNamara grandmothers and Jugga Jugga led by Janine, because they then assisted us to compensate for the services that the men in the States should have received but were not working properly because of COVID. They also connected with another grandmother in the US who's been helping many men who have gone from Nauru and Manus to the US. But it's been a long and tortuous journey for them. And our support has helped them to overcome the worst of what they could have faced in the US. And after 8 months, there was a miraculous kind of turnaround. And then three men we've helped through a very difficult journey and a very scary, initially, journey to resettle in the US. But they're doing amazingly well and they're pretty much independent now. At one stage, we had a very good woman politician who was a medical practitioner, and she fought for the right for men to come out of the Pacific Island offshore detention to Australia, because some of those men had died in both Nauru and Papua New Guinea for lack of medical services. So they were brought to Australia. But again, it was in the middle of COVID. They didn't get medical attention. Instead, they were locked up in what were called immigration detention centres or alternative places of detention, which were basically locked in low-grade hotel rooms. And that situation that we've been trying to do something about and support various men caught up in that system. As of early this year, they've been released. What the grandmothers have been able to do is, now that the men in the States are independent, we have focused on supporting a group of men that we have come to know. There are many other people supporting in various ways, but what we've been able to do with, you know, about 15 men really, is engage at a very personal level. And the grandmothers have sustained their support and interest. So it's friendship and moral support and being there during the COVID lockdowns. If you can imagine being in detention for 9 years, then coming out into COVID lockdowns. Melbourne had the world's longest COVID lockdowns. So they couldn't go anywhere. They couldn't do anything. They can look for jobs. They're not given any social security support whatsoever. So the support that the grandmothers have enabled me to pass on to these men has been extremely important. There are many stories to tell, but one particular guy, he's Iranian. He was suddenly let out on his own in May this year, totally isolated in COVID lockdowns, reached out to me, and I started by sending him kebabs. And then once there was a short break in the lockdowns, we got to know him. And he came out just as the 4,000 Afghanis were airlifted out of Kabul and arrived in Melbourne. And when we went to visit him at the end of the last COVID lockdown and asked, have you been out in the park? He said, no, I'm scared of the police. You know, I try to say hello to people on the streets like I say hello in Papua New Guinea, and people think I'm asking for money. They back away from me. So while we were in the park, he began talking to some of the Afghani women. And that started an engagement with the Afghani families, which this Iranian guy, who has no support, no social security support, no guaranteed future pathway himself, has given his last 2 or 3 months to supporting thousands of those families through donations and kindness and things offered by the grandmothers. So it's been a very interesting journey. Every single case of the men who were held in detention is different, but at least we have been able to give great support to 15 through the grandmother support, and one of them is giving great support to thousands of Afghani new arrivals.
It's quite extraordinary, but it also makes so much sense, because there is always in these stories and in this kind of work the personal dimension of the kind of support that you've been able to afford, and then the systemic piece of it too. So many of the older women activists that I have had the privilege to speak with engage in the same way that all of you are doing. deeply intimate personal ways of offering support and being involved and finding a new group of like-minded peers with whom to work. And then there is this sort of systemic challenge that has to go on at the same time.
Yes, what you're saying resonates with me. I'd like to just go on from what Sabet was saying, because our organization has always been an advocacy one, a pressure group, if you like, and that's been great and still continues to be. And yes, there are the systemic things in our society which need to be changed, and that's what we will continue to work on. But for our group, meeting Sabet and through her coming into personal contact with some of these people who need support has really added a whole new dimension to our commitment. And currently, we're working with the Grandmother Central on an election approach, because we have an election coming up next year, a federal election. And we figure that really the only way to bring about any change in this situation for refugees in Australia and offshore is through a change of government. We have basically two options in Australia: the current government, which is a centre-right government, I suppose, and the opposition is a centre-left government. Both of them have supported these draconian and horrible policies, but we are really trying to put pressure on to change the Labor Party, the opposition's version of what they need to do. And so our focus now is a campaign which is going to raise consciousness of the population to make the change and put the pressure on the Labor Party to change its policies in regard to refugees.
Thanks, Janine.
Jane here. Can I just add something in regard to the upcoming election? A really interesting thing is happening in Australia at the moment, and both our centre parties, as Janine has said, and the whole world knows that Australia is absolutely lagging behind in doing anything on climate change. And we now have quite a number of independent candidates standing at the next election who are being supported by their communities and have got a very strong sense that certainly the climate stuff is all wrong and everything else is wrong, and then refugee stuff isn't particularly being mentioned, but it's in that unfair social policy area that they have as well. And this is actually our only hope, that we might end up with a government that is not able to be controlled by either of the major parties. So we've kind of got our fingers crossed that some of the seats with the big yes men of the right-wing party will be replaced by community-based independents. And if that happens, it will be fantastic. The pat on the back that democracy needs at the moment. To me, that's our main hope. If people don't really understand what the problems are, and at the moment there is a glimmer of a solution on the horizon, but who knows?
It's quite helpful, Jane, and for a lot of us who follow politics globally, there's just been a lot of consternation about what's happening in Australia. So it's awfully good to hear from you. I have asked this question of a lot of groups, grassroots activist groups of older women who identify themselves as grandmothers in their activism. I don't want to impose a significance, but I'm interested in hearing from you why you think that's an important identity to bring to the fore of advocacy.
Jane here. I think the original meeting was advertised as a grandmother's initiative. And I know my immediate thought was, oh, grandmothers, that's a good voice. I'm going to go to that meeting wherever it is, whenever it is. And maybe Janine, I wonder what her sense was.
Hi, it's Janine again. I went along because of my commitment to refugees and because I was a grandmother. I think it was a good name to use and a good group, because I think grandmothers are seen as wise and nurturing and I suppose non-threatening, and they're recognisable. So I think all of those things came into play when the name was chosen. Given that the original group was against detention of children, grandmothers have a connection to their grandchildren, obviously, and a lot of the people involved had worked in childhood detention. So it was a group that certainly resonated with me for all of those reasons.
Thanks. Sabet?
Yes, as you heard already, I'm a supporter of the advocacy led by people like Jane and Janine. I'm actually still trying to make sense of the Australian political system, having been away for 50 years. It's a long time, but I'm totally in support of the strategies that they're now adopting for the community-based independent candidates. I'm very proud to be a grandmother. I always like to compare my 15 grandchildren. I have adopted family in Papua New Guinea, and during my years, I actually had my adopted sons in Fiji, and I'm left with a grandchild in Fiji. a Fijian grandmother, her grandmother and myself, we're basically raising that grandchild. So I feel very proud of being a grandmother. But in terms of engaging with people, I think it's very important for the Australian public to realise that grandmothers are not little old ladies. They can be very politically savvy. And that's the point that people are always making at vigils when they're interacting with the public. But also in terms of engagement with the men who are suffering the trauma of detention, they don't call us grandmothers. They tend to call us mothers. And a couple of them I've insisted they call me big sister, not mother, because I'm not that old. But the relationship is very different to many people who've supported them and befriended them on Facebook and who've celebrated their release from detention in Melbourne and held parties for them. That's a different kind of engagement. I think they feel very safe with us, and they do talk about their trauma and they do talk about their real needs, and they can message us at, you know, midnight, "Hi, Mum, how are you?" But it's basically us to reach out and find out how they are and what their needs are. So the wisdom and the knowledge and the political savvy and the kind of relationship that people can have with a mother and grandmother in support of men who were so long held in detention, that's important. And I think we can be very proud. But I think it's very important for us to project an image of also being fierce and being fighters and people who can change and influence the political system in Australia. And this horrible period of cruel treatment of people seeking refugee status and asylum here in Australia, that we can finally bring that to an end. And that's what I want to be part of.
I love that. That resonates deeply. You've spoken beautifully, all of you, about what you're hoping will happen, the different ways that you're working to get there from the personal to the political realm. But I wonder, since I know that there will be women in Australia, but also beyond, who will listen to this conversation, what do you want to say to them now? And for women who are outside of Australia, who are interested to hear you and of your activism, is there anything that you would share with them?
Well, it's Jane here. And I can say for any grandmothers in Australia who have now heard about us, just join us. It's so easy to do. We've got a website, Grandmothers for Web Refugees. We've got Facebook sites. There's a lot of us in Victoria. There's a lot in New South Wales. There's some in Tasmania. There's, you know, and then there are different refugee groups in different parts of Australia. Just join. That's all I can say. And wherever you are, if you're keen, you will find other people around you who are also keen, who've been waiting for a chance to join. All you've got to do is go to the op shop and get something purple. Get on our membership list and you're there. We're also concerned about the future for our children and grandchildren, and Australia desperately needs change. The interesting thing about all the independent candidates that I spoke of before is they're all women. The community is looking for someone to represent them. And in every case so far, they're women who are standing up. It's fantastic.
Can I jump in? It's Janine.
Please.
I would say, if you're thinking of setting up an organisation anywhere in the world, I think our model works really well, where there is a central committee that's elected. Then there's a consultative group, which has a member from each of the electorates. And then the bulk of the work is done by local people who get together. And I think that's a really good model. It keeps it at that grassroots level where people who live in the same community come together. And our group has become friends. I mean, beyond the grandmothers' campaign, we support each other through all sorts of things. Cancer issues and family crises and all sorts of other things have become part of our group too. And I think that sort of gels us so that in our activism, we're stronger. The other thing I wanted to say to anyone listening overseas, if your government is considering following along the lines of ours and offshore processing and indefinite detention, and I think this is coming up in England, you need to get mobilised and make sure that doesn't happen. It is just disgraceful. It's inhumane. It's horrible. So that's happening in your country. Please take action now. Thank you.
Thanks, Janine. And Sabat.
Yeah, so I'll step in here and say that if women in the US are listening to this, please be aware that many men who were held for many long years in very remote Pacific islands were not allowed to step foot on Australian soil, many of them, or if they did, it was again into another form of detention, that they have been arriving on the shores of the US for the last 18 months or almost 2 years. Some of them we've been able to help. We've been able to help because one grandmother, a teacher in the States, has stepped up and she's been supporting a large number of the men who arrive from offshore detention in Australia through this Australia-US scheme. And because of the Facebook page, she found out about grandmothers in Australia and we were able to connect with her, and she was absolutely invaluable as an advocate to the men who we supported through that very difficult first 8 months of resettlement in the States. She actively advocated for those men. She befriended them. She gave them wise counsel and support. So yes, connect with us, connect Grandmothers for Refugees, and you may be able to help somebody who's still struggling, because not every person who has resettled in the States is on their feet yet. Some are really going through a very hard time. So network with us if you can. For the grandmothers or women in Australia who are listening, I think it's very important to be political in your commitment now. Whether you're a member and a passive member, it's now time to step up and be political and make that difference we've been talking about through the next elections. So networking, be political, take the personal step and be jolted out of your comfort zone. Unite, grandmothers of the world.
I can't think of a better place to end. I think that could be your next banner. Thank you. Thank you immensely, both for the work that you're all doing and will do, and for this conversation.
Thank you for the opportunity, and it's been lovely to meet you. Thank you.
Thanks, Ilana.
Be well, everyone.
Thanks, you. Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening. I'm Ilana Landsberg-Lewis, your host of Grandmothers on the Move. If you want to find out more about me or the podcast, go to grandmothersonthemove.com and come back next week for another episode.